Good Shabbos, everyone. Shabbat Shalom and Chanukah Sameach. Chanukah is one of those holidays where ignorance is bliss. We get very romantic about the miracle of the oil lasting 8 days, the formidable Greek army falling to an ill-equipped band of Jewish Maccabees, and about eating latkes and jelly donuts and playing dreidel. But if we look deeper into the Chanukah story, we find the harsher reality. The infighting among Jews continued to wear us down. We never regained full control over Israel from the Greeks, and the Romans eventually sent us into our current exile. Talk about putting a damper on your latkes. But you may say, at least we have the miracle of the oil, right? Well, not so much, because we have the commentary of the Pnei Yehoshua, who asks a devastating question about our cherished celebration of this holiday. He wonders whether the miracle of Chanukah was even necessary, because there is a rule that Tuma Hutra Bitzibur, impurity will not nullify a mitzvah performed in a public forum. In other words, it is so important to hold services for the public that the Torah forgoes the requirement that the oil be pure, a mandate which makes no such exception for private services. The menorah lighting in the Beit HaMikdash was clearly a public service, so they were not required to use pure oil, especially because they had none available, which renders the entire Chanukah miracle and thus our beloved holiday completely unnecessary. The Pnei Yehoshua does a lengthy analysis of this issue, but he can't find any way around it. He can't find a solid reason why they couldn't use impure oil in the Beit HaMikdash. Nonetheless, he provides a new perspective on the miracle by using what I always thought to be a concept from Pirkei Avot, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Yedalad, where we learn about God's surprising declaration to the Jewish people. He tells them that because they are beloved to him, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenitan Lahem Kli Chemda, he has given them the extraordinary gift of a Kli Chemda, a lovable vessel. The commentators on the Mishnah say that this refers to the Torah. At first glance, it seems very strange to call the Torah a lovable vessel. But the Mishnah explains that God sought to emphasize that we're his beloved children, so he did something extra by telling us explicitly that the Torah is a gift. The Torah may be a compendium of laws, but it is also much more than that. It is a gift that reflects our relationship with God. In a similar vein, the Pnei Yehoshua concludes that by performing the miracle of the oil, God intended to show the Jewish people his love for them, Chaviv in Yisrael, by doing something that was not necessary. In other words, by making a special gesture, a gift, and that gift was the miracle and holiday of Chanukah. You can see this same message in our parsha. That's why Yosef is connected Kabbalistically with Chanukah, and why the parshiot about him always come out at the same time of year as Chanukah. The parsha tells us about a very strange incident when the brothers implore their father to let them return to Egypt for food, even though this time they must take Benjamin along because of Yosef's order to do so. Yaakov initially denies permission for their trip because he fears for Benjamin's life. When he finally relents, he instructs the brothers to take little gift baskets to Yosef with balsam, honey, pistachios, and almonds, the way you would bring a small box of Godiva chocolate when you visit someone's home. Considering the grave circumstances of their return to Egypt, such gifts seem absurdly inappropriate, and the Midrash tells us that Yehuda thought his father was losing it. But he didn't want to argue, so he stuffed the gifts in the bottom of his bag and planned to leave them there. However, upon seeing Yosef in Egypt, the brothers try to return the money that they found in their bag after returning the first time, but Yosef says, "No, I already got your money, don't worry, God must have given you the money as a gift." At that point, Yehuda changes his mind and they present Yosef with the Godiva chocolate, so to speak. Why the change of heart? Because Yehuda now understood what Jacob had realized from the beginning, that this king was not typical. He was connected to his people and cared about them. Yehuda had viewed Yosef as an intimidating ruler, but then he realized that Yosef was a sensitive man who was invested in relationships. In other words, Yosef was a ruler in the same mold as God, a ruler who chooses connection over power plays. And that's why his name was Yosef. If you recall from last week, we discussed that one meaning of Yosef is to add on. As soon as Rachel was blessed with Yosef's birth, she was asking for another one. Compare this to Leah's reaction when she had her fourth child, even though she was only supposed to have three. She called him Yehuda because she saw she was getting, quote-unquote, Yoter Michalki, more than her share. Yehuda grew up to be someone with a forbidding concept about God, that God is a ruler you must obey. But Rachel was certain that she was a child of God. When you feel that love, that chavivut, that feeling of being beloved, you can dare to ask for more. Yosef grew up to be someone with a much more expansive notion of God's kingship, that God is not only Malkenu, our king, but also Avinu, our father. And Yosef, who was called Avreich, the soft father figure by the Egyptians, modeled his kingdom on God's example. Which brings us back to Chanukah. Not only was the miracle unnecessary, but the mitzvah we perform today is unnecessary. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, says that the only requirement on Chanukah is that we should light one candle for an entire household. The Mahadrin, the next level, is that everyone in the household lights one candle. And the Mahadrin Min Mahadrin, the extra super duper level, as is what we do now, halachically, each night we add one more candle until we get to eight. No other mitzvah is presented in this fashion with a hierarchy of choices. So why is Chanukah treated like this? There are two ways to look at these levels of Mahadrin observance. On one hand, you can think about Mahadrin Menahadrin the way the term is used in the kosher industry, that it is an indication of stricter kosher observance. On the other hand, you can learn from Rashi's explanation that the meaning of Hadar is reflected in the way it's used with an etrog, pre-eitz Hadar, where Hadar means not strict, but beautiful. And we know that is the more accurate term of the Hebrew word. At the level of Mahadrin Min Mahadrin, the candles in the entire household become more beautiful. It's truly sad that in the name of religion, we take a word for beauty and distort it to mean strict. So Chanukah teaches us that this world is not just a place where we serve God as a means to the world to come by ensuring that we keep accounts, so to speak, and stick to the strictest letter of the law. It's a place where we can have meaningful relationships that really matter. The same concept applies to our shul and the wider Jewish community. We need to know that keeping halakha is very important, but being overly strict about halakha should be much less of a priority than the spirit of our relationships. Being rigid about halakha is a classic misunderstanding of the word hadar. God is not simply about the bottom line, and deep down, we all know this to be true. The value and purpose of the Jewish people lies in the relationships we build with one another and the bonds of community and caring we develop together. That is the message of Chanukah, and that is what makes Chanukah essential to the Jewish people and why it is the holiday that makes us beautiful. Shabbat Shalom.